whole lot of other random stuff. Step 2, easy stuff. Our living room is a halfway point for things that enter the house but don't get put to use right away. A box of cereal someone dropped on the couch as they brought in groceries. I have no idea why either. Clean laundry piled high, or the partially assembled vacuum cleaner along with the box it came in. Procrastinate clutter. Take a thing where it goes as soon as you come across it. Some people call this part picking up or tidying or, seriously, how does any adult not do this every day stuff? Whatever it's called, do it. If you're balking at the idea of making a separate trip to take each thing to its already established home, try this. As you pick up something and know where you need to take it, glance around to see if anything else that's obvious goes to that place too. If so, grab the obvious thing and take it with you. Keep doing what you're doing. The easy stuff step is removing the top layer of the mess. Step 3. Duh clutter. Identify duh donations. Look around for stuff you never liked, but for some reason were waiting to get rid of until you were in a decluttering mood. Well, you're in the mood now. While we're talking about decluttering does, let's talk about furniture. Big stuff. Entire tables, or cabinets, or chairs, or even couches. Furniture is expensive, and it's supposed to be useful. I move it to a new spot, hoping that putting the table there will make my life better, the way I envisioned it would when I bought it. But when it doesn't, I move the table again. And then again. Is that very large item causing more problems than it's solving? Getting rid of big stuff is a big pain, but there's also a big benefit. The room immediately feels bigger and less cramped, and the big thing's non-existence will mean there's no surface to pile stuff on. Step 4. Ask the decluttering questions. Head to the most visible place in the room with clutter to be purged. At this point, you're decluttering pile by pile. At the first pile, start with another easy check. Is anything easy lurking on top of this pile that didn't register in your brain when you were looking at the room as a whole? At any phase of any decluttering project, always be on the lookout for easy stuff. If something isn't easy, ask the decluttering questions. Decluttering question number 1. If I needed this item, where would I look for it first? Trust your instinct. Where would you look for it? The first place that pops in your head is the answer to the question, so that's where you take it right now. But let's go ahead and deal with some snarky resistance to this question. What if you'd look for pliers in the living room? If you'd look in a particular drawer, put them there. But if you just look in the living room, on the hearth or the coffee table, no. I get it. The house has been bonkers for so long. Even though you'd never put pliers on the coffee table on purpose because they're pliers and it's the coffee table, you'd look there first because the living room is the first place you look for everything. But really, you're just being snarky, right? And you bought a book about decluttering. You paid money because you were desperate enough for help that you decided to read about decluttering. That's not exactly escapism. Get over the snark and ask yourself where you'd look for this item other than where you found it. Because here, it's clutter. It's in a pile. Where would you look first if this room wasn't a crazy mess? Let me clarify one more thing to be sure you're asking the entire question correctly. Where would you look for it? Not where would you stick it? Where would I stick this was the question I asked myself again and again before the deslobification process. That question doesn't work. That question is the reason I had a kitchen junk drawer full of 30-plus ponytail holders. We never, and I do mean never, look for ponytail holders in the kitchen junk drawer. Those 30-plus ponytail holders sat in the kitchen junk drawer while we desperately searched the house for one. We walked past the kitchen junk drawer again and again without ever considering looking in there for a ponytail holder. My goal is to be able to find what I need in the moment I need it, without trying to remember what I might have been thinking in the midst of a crazy and frantic cleaning session. be prepared for distractions. In real life, distractions happen. Resist the urge to be super duper efficient and throw everything into a box so you can deliver items to their where would I look first homes on one big trip through the house at the end of the project. Keep boxes don't work. They let me put off making a final decision. I can temporarily place a particularly difficult item inside, confident that the future version of me will know what to do with it. Future me doesn't deserve that much credit, and honestly, she doesn't appreciate the pressure. Keep boxes let me justify waiting to put things away. They're neat little procrastination holders. I'm still working through keep boxes that have been in my garage since we moved 12 years ago. If I put things away immediately, I'm done. If I stick things in a keep box, I have empty that keep box on my mental to-do list indefinitely. Keep piles don't work either. Remember my strategy for how to declutter without making a bigger mess? Remember how you got excited because making a bigger mess every time you declutter is your biggest frustration with decluttering? Keep piles equal a bigger mess in my home. If I make piles and a distraction happens, the piles morph and grow while I'm gone. I've made a bigger mess outside the space I was originally decluttering. If I take things where they go immediately, whenever I get distracted, I've made progress. Decluttering question number two. If I needed this item, would it ever occur to me that I already had one? If there's no answer for question number one, ask question number two. I know I have ponytail holders. I know I have pliers. But I may or may not know that I have a set of glittery nail polishes that I got for Christmas and then left on the fireplace hearth where they were eventually buried under a pile of things like ponytail holders and pliers and trash. If I didn't even know I had them, they need to go in the donate box. Step five, make it fit. Trash is gone. Things that don't belong in this space are in the places where they do belong. And stuff you wouldn't look for at all is in the donate box. But the room still feels cluttered. This step is about applying the container concept to each area of the room. Surface by surface, shelf by shelf, you're accepting the limits of each container and, ultimately, the room. Are there books shoved every which way on the bookshelf and maybe where you can barely see it? A special photo in a special frame turned sideways and pushed to the back? The books and the photo all passed the where would I look first test. But the bookshelf is a container. It is a natural limit that decides how many books you can keep. It's finite. And it has to also contain that photo. If the wonky books shoved on top are wonky because you read them often, they may be your favorites. Pull out your least favorites until all the books and the framed photo have space. Real, vertical, and everything space in the container. I know you're mad right now. I'm using books as my first example. Books are the most emotional of all clutter for so many people like me who'd prefer to live in a fantasy world over the real one. Fine. I'll talk about other things and then come back to books. Maybe you folded up a bunch of cozy lap blankets during step two. Folding blankets is easy. You put them in the cute basket you bought on sale because it was perfect for storing blankets. Putting them in the basket was easy, but they've already fallen over because you piled them so high they couldn't balance. Pull out your least favorite blankets until the ones left fit easily in this established blanket storing space. Without teetering. Put the least favorite blankets in your donate box. Now let's go back to books. I understand emotions over books, and I get attachment and sentimentality too. But, y'all, I had to eliminate emotions from my decluttering process. If I let emotions guide me, either good emotions or bad ones, I spiraled down a winding path of crazy, and I didn't get much decluttering done. I let the container make the tough decisions. I don't have to evaluate the worthiness of each book and somehow worry about offending these inanimate objects. I just have to let the shelf determine how many I can keep. But let's talk a little more about that framed photo. the one you hadn't seen in a while because it's been shoved sideways or knocked over. If the photo is going to stay there, it needs space. And not just barely enough space to squeeze onto the shelf, but space to do its job. My definition of clutter is anything that consistently gets out of control. If you only give that photo enough room to stand up, it's going to get squeezed out and knocked over again every time you take out or put back a book. If that happens, something on that shelf, either the photo or some books, are clutter, and they need to go. But what about the intense desire to go bookshelf shopping so you can keep all the books? This is a living area, right? It's for living. There needs to be room for living, for sitting, for reading, for talking, for plopping down on the couch, for resting together as a family. This means the goal of this room isn't to fit as many books as possible. It's not a storage room or even a library. If another bookshelf would make living more difficult, don't do it. Once you finish the bookshelf, move on to the next visible pile or space and work through the steps again. After every out-in-the-open space in this room has been decluttered, you have two choices. Either you can start going through the steps on a non-visible space in this room, like the drawers of the TV cabinet, or you can move on to the next rooms out in the open surfaces. Neither way is wrong, but whatever you choose to do next, look around and see the difference you've made in this room. Aren't you impressed with yourself? Paper clutter. Paper. Paper piles and boxes full of paper and the never-ending influx of paper coming into your mailbox. Ugh. I didn't want to include a section on this subject, but since it's the question I get more than any other, I'm not sure how I can avoid it. I'm putting it in the chapter about living areas because if paper clutter is an issue for you, it can be an issue in any or every area of your house. I remind you that this is a book about decluttering and not, as I've said again and again, a book about organizing. I won't tell you how to set up a file cabinet, but I will share strategies I've used in my home over the past 8 years that have significantly reduced my paper clutter. Less and better. If you are overrun with paper, you're overwhelmed. Just like any pile of clutter, a pile of paper seems to be a pile of decisions to be made, and paper decisions are the most overwhelming. But the same strategies that work with any kind of clutter work with paper too. Get into the mindset that your goals are less and better. That anything you can do to reduce the overall mass of paper clutter in your home will be worth the effort. Giving yourself permission to do something without the pressure of solving this never-ending problem once and for all is giving yourself permission to get started. Just declutter. Here's a guess. If paper is stressing you out, it's because you have a pile or 67 piles somewhere. Here's another guess. You don't need every single piece of paper in those piles. Give yourself permission to just declutter. And just declutter the easy stuff, the trash and the does. Because important stuff is often made of paper, the brain, or at least my brain, assumes everything in a paper pile is important. Even when I know that isn't true, I'm so scared to look. Always look. When a paper pile overwhelms me and I find myself pretending it doesn't exist, I give myself permission to simply look. To feel absolutely no obligation to make any decisions at all. Just to look at each piece of paper in the pile and only get rid of the ones that are easy. Every single time I do this, I reduce the pile by more than half. A smaller pile is less overwhelming. My brain also knows for a fact what's in that pile. And I find that I'm more willing and able to deal with it after that knowledge has processed in my brain, even subconsciously, for a while. Eliminate procrastination stations. Paper keeps coming into the house and keeps coming and keeps coming. The number one thing I have done to dramatically reduce the paper clutter in our home is to walk straight from the mailbox to the trash can or recycle bin if you have one and immediately throw away anything we don't need. Immediately. Right away. Without stopping. When I do this, paper stays under control. when I don't, it grows into overwhelming piles. And honestly, I have to be the one to get the mail. While getting the mail sounds like a great job for a kid, it's not. I'm the one who can tell at a glance what needs to go and what needs to stay. If anyone else brings in the mail, it goes straight onto the dining room table where it grows into a pile of things that might or might not be important. If you need to shred things that come in daily, walk straight to the shredder as you bring in the mail. One day's shredding won't jam and overheat your shredder the way a year's worth does. Go digital. We don't get as much mail as we once did because we receive most of our monthly statements and pay our bills online. We were scared about paying bills online, but now that we do, we absolutely love not having all that paper come into our home. If you're scared, talk to your bank. Most banks so desperately want you to do your banking online that they will help you set up your online account and train you to use it. Every time you receive a piece of mail that isn't trash, check at the bottom of your statement to see if there's a website where you can sign up to go paperless. Do this while you're paying your bills. Gradually, you'll have less paper clutter. Contain it. You knew I was going to say this, right? The container concept works, but if you are overrun with paper, you need to declutter before you contain. Obviously, important papers need to be kept. But if you have piles and piles and boxes of paper clutter, don't start by heading out to buy a truckload of extra large filing cabinets. Declutter first. Go through every pile, eliminating the papers you don't need. By the time you're done, you'll have a better understanding of the type and size of container you need. But if, by chance, you're not convinced you'll be the best at filing each and every piece of paper the minute it comes into your house, like I'm not, still get a container. Or if you try and fail, like I did, still get a container. I have a plastic, paper-sized container that fits on that piece of countertop in my kitchen where meaningful papers end up anyway. Meaningful papers go in that container. When it gets full, my brain usually recognizes that I need to go through it and get rid of things that were once meaningful or I once thought were meaningful but are no longer meaningful. Kids' drawings. The good news is that as your kids grow, they will bring home fewer and fewer keep-worthy papers. That's also the bad news for mamas who dread the end of childhood. Again, contain it. Get a container for each child. Choose a container that will fit in a space you have to give. Your container. Fill up that container, and once it's full, practice the one-in, one-out rule. I know that's simple, but it works. I promise, if you train your kids to take non-emotional papers straight to the recycle bin, over time, they'll identify more and more as non-emotional. Our weekly folder checks for the still an elementary child go like this. Yay, so good, sweetie. Now go throw it away. And neither of us cries. More useful tips for living areas. If you need to move or remove furniture, place a shiny gift bag, you know you have extras, under each leg of the piece of furniture. These act as sliders and will help the furniture glide more easily across the floor. Go for minimalism. Identify the essentials needed to help this room serve its purpose. For us, that's super comfortable seating for 5 and decently comfortable seating for 8. And a TV we can all see from any of those seats. Anything else has to prove itself worthy of being in this room. Enjoy the perks of your decluttered living areas. Living areas are on the top of the priority list because they're visible. The visible progress you make in them will increase your energy to keep making progress. But clutter-free living areas also make living easier in general. When living areas are under control, the entire house feels more under control, and you can open the front door without having a panic attack. Yay for fewer clutter-related panic attacks. Chapter 12. Kitchen. Living areas were first because those are natural gathering areas. Kitchens are almost equally guaranteed to be seen by guests. People wander into the kitchen to help or just to hang out. It's a fact. It's also a fact that the kitchen needs to look clean. Guests want to know their food is coming from a place they can trust. A decluttered kitchen looks cleaner and is easier to keep clean. Again, let's work through the steps to tackling an overwhelming mess. Keep the visibility rule in mind, starting with visible surfaces first. Step 1, trash. A bread bag with only a heel, the pasta box that has been empty since last night, or last week, but is still sitting on the counter. Empty boxes of cereal on the breakfast table. Step 2, easy stuff. Put things away in their established, decision-free homes. Doing easy stuff requires movement, but not brain power. In our kitchen, there are always random easy things, like an ice chest that's been sitting in the corner of the kitchen since last summer's day at the lake. It needs to go to the garage. That's easy. The lamp that's been sitting on the breakfast table because it seemed easier to bring it in here from the living room than to change the bulb on the kitchen ceiling fan? That's easy. Put a new light bulb in the ceiling fan and move the lamp back to the living room. Once the obviously easy stuff is done, it's time to talk about stuff that's easy, but completely unfun. The kitchen has some unique challenges in the easy stuff step. A lot of the easy stuff in the kitchen is procrasticlutter. And procrasticlutter is procrasticlutter because you don't love doing it. Irritation over the existence of procrasticlutter can make easy stuff feel like it's not easy. Example, dirty dishes. Dirty dishes require an additional step before they get put away. They have to be washed. There's no decision to make about whether dishes need to be washed, and that makes them easy. Even though stopping this decluttering project to wash dishes feels wrong, do it. There is no way around this. But here's a decluttering clue for later that should make you feel better. You like your dirty dishes more than you like the clean ones sitting in the cabinets. Those dishes are dirty because you chose them. They're dirty while others are clean because you chose them over the dishes that are sitting in your cabinets. If every dish you own is dirty, don't be discouraged. You just need my other book, How to Manage Your Home Without Losing Your Mind. Step 3, duh clutter. As your dishwasher is running or dishes are drying on the counter, look for duh donations on surfaces and inside cabinets and drawers. I know, I just went against my own visibility rule, and it's only the second room. In the kitchen, multiple items, large and small, get pulled out of and put back into drawers and cabinets every day. So function is everything. Decluttering both visible surfaces and inside closed cabinets is important. Without pulling everything out, look for obvious clutter that can go straight in the donate box. Does might be a weird-sized bonus skillet from a set of pots and pans. Maybe it's the bag of canned goods you put together to donate, but then never did. Stick those in the donate box. The goal here, as always, is to reduce the overall volume of stuff. Reducing the volume of stuff reduces the visible scariness of the task and helps you gain momentum in this room. Step 4, ask the decluttering questions. You've cleared the easy stuff. Now it's time to dig into piles and drawers and cabinets. Start with any piles that exist out in the open and go through the steps one mess at a time. Decluttering question number 1. If I needed this item, where would I look for it first? You're asking yourself where you'd look first if the counter were clear. The counter being clear is the goal, right? Wherever you'd look first, take it there now. If you hem and haw at decluttering question number 1, ask yourself the second decluttering question. Decluttering question number 2. If I needed this item, would it ever occur to me that I already had one? For example, a garlic press. If you needed to mince garlic, would you search for your garlic press? Or would you smash the garlic with the side of the knife you were using to chop other vegetables? Would you do this without ever stopping to consider if you have a garlic press? In the kitchen, question number 2 isn't always a matter of whether I would go out and buy the item. It's a matter of whether my natural inclination would be to make do with another kitchen tool that has lots of different uses and works perfectly fine for this job too. What I can't do is hold a garlic press in my hand and ponder whether it's a valuable and useful item. Of course it is, but I don't use it. The decluttering questions work because they deal with reality only, not possibilities, potential, or emotion. Yay for simple questions that make decisions simple. By the time your surfaces, other than the ones where dishes lay drying, are clear and you've removed all the stuff you don't like, or know for a fact you don't use, from the drawers and cabinets, your dishes will hopefully be dry. Step 5, make it fit. As you put away clean dishes, the container concept will slap you in the face. View your plate shelf as a container. The size of that shelf or those shelves determines how many plates you can keep. And they have to fit comfortably. Comfortably means not squeezed in so tight you have to rearrange the cabinet every time you need a plate. Remember, the dishes you just washed are your favorites. You chose them over the dishes that are left in the cabinet. They deserve cabinet space more than the ones sitting in there that you don't use as often. Step 5.1, consolidate. In my kitchen, things are mostly already consolidated. I have a coffee cup shelf and a utensil drawer. But if you're struggling to accept the limitations of your container, consciously consolidate. Put pasta pots together. Stack skillets. Put all your saucepans in one place. If you can't fit your favorite pasta pot that you just washed comfortably in the cabinet, count how many pasta pots you have. 2? 7? This one is your favorite, so start removing your least favorite, or favorites, until it fits. If there isn't room for the 2 skillets you need to put away and you truly use both skillets regularly, remove 1 or 2 more of those pasta pots to make room. Keep consolidating. Don't worry, we're not getting organized. This is still decluttering. Organizing would be pot racks and shelf dividers and such, and we're not going there. But consolidating is part of decluttering. Consolidating is a reality check. I remember exactly what I wore for my school awards assembly back in 1989, but I have absolutely no idea how many pots or pans I have unless I'm looking in my pots and pans cabinet. And if I can't see one pan because it's hidden behind another pot, it simply doesn't exist in my universe. Consolidating breaks through that mental block for me. To consolidate, I have to actively move things, consciously look at things. What was a decent number of skillets becomes 5 skillets. The number 5, a concrete number as opposed to my totally ambiguous concept of how many I might have, registers in my brain as more than I need. And as that realization hits me, my eyes are opened and the 3 I rarely use and don't actually like reveal themselves to me. Step 5.2, purge down to the limits of the container. Keep going. Declutter until the things that are left fit comfortably in the space you have and are easily accessible. Leave space to reach in and grab the skillet you need without first having to move your slow cooker out of the way. The pantry. A kitchen is so much more than pots and pans and silverware. It's food, too. If you don't have a pantry, use these steps wherever you store your shelf-stable foods or spices. Step 1, trash. In the pantry, trash is expired stuff. If you want to argue about that, wait until the end of this chapter. Trash is empty boxes and bags, and almost empty boxes and bags with a small amount of stale food in them. Step 2, easy stuff. Like everywhere else, easy stuff in the pantry is the stuff that already has an established home somewhere else in the house. Like a stuffed animal or a tube of toothpaste. It happens. Take these things to their homes. Step 3, duh clutter. Start pulling out duhs. In the pantry, duhs are the things you will never eat. It happens to me too. I buy something because it's such a great deal. Or my mom sends me home after Memorial Day with a bag full of cookies and canned goods, and most of it is still sitting in my pantry on the 4th of July of the following year. Or I thought for sure I was going to love a new recipe and bought 2 of something because there was a buy one, get one free sale, but we hated the recipe and I'd never use the odd ingredient for anything else. In an ideal world, these things would leave my pantry gradually as I notice they're there and realize I'll never use them. But I don't live in an ideal world. I live in my house. In my house, I need focused decluttering time to deal with these things. off to the donate box they go. Step 4. Ask the decluttering questions. Work through the 2 decluttering questions. In the pantry, I like to think I only have things I'd actually look for in there, but asking myself these questions helps me realize that even though I had a moment when I thought the pantry was a great place to stick my tortilla warmer, I wouldn't actually look for it in there. Step 5. Make it fit. I always felt sorry for myself over my lack of proper pantry space. By proper, I mean bigger than what I had. I pouted because I couldn't fit new groceries onto my existing shelves, but I was wrong. Those existing shelves held full-sized boxes with only one cracker inside, or expired food, or were just so scattered and wompy-jawed that the stuff inside took up twice the room it would need if it were neatly arranged. If your pantry was crazy before you started this process, my guess is that you now have a lot more available space in there than you thought you would. I assume that removing easy stuff has freed up quite a bit of room. Step 5.1, consolidate. Put rice together, pasta together, and jars of sauces together. If there's a single serving of dried pinto beans in the bottoms of 4 different bags, combine them into one. Canned goods go in one place, grouped according to what's in each can. Remember, consolidating is my reality check. This simple step shows me if I've been grabbing one box of angel hair pasta every time I've been to the store for the past 2 months. Usually, though not always, this realization helps me not grab it the next time. Step 5.2. Purge down to the limits of the container. Before we focus on getting this purge down to fit the space, do one last reality check. Look around your kitchen or in the trunk of your car for any random pantry items that were never put away. Put them away. If your new stuff still won't fit, let me tell you a secret. It won't fit. This is the container concept. The size of the pantry space you have is the size of the pantry space you have. But don't use the fact that it doesn't all fit as a reason to start shopping for a new house. Use it as a reason to keep decluttering. If there's only so much space available for canned goods, that space is full of canned goods, and you have a sack full of canned goods that needs to be put away, use the one-in, one-out rule. For every can that needs to go into the pantry, remove a less desirable can to make room. This motivates me to be realistic. I love red beans and rice, but I make it once a year at the most. I need only 2 cans to make that one meal. If I bought 2 cans because I mistakenly thought I didn't have any, they don't need to go in the pantry too. I put the older, but not expired, 2 cans in the donate box. Eventually, if I kept them, I would use all 4 cans, but I don't have room for 4 cans. If I need to put away 4 cans of peas, but see I already have 12 cans of peas, I learn I tend to pick up peas regularly. 12 is more than enough, so I stick the 4 oldest, but not expired, cans in the donate box. I don't have to evaluate the nutritional value of each item. I just have to acknowledge that the size of my cabinet determines how much I can keep in my home at one time. Maybe I found barbecue sauce in that grocery bag that was sitting on the kitchen floor. I need barbecue sauce, but I don't have the space for it because the pantry is already full. So I look in the pantry for something I don't need as badly as I need that barbecue sauce. I find a jar of artichokes. I love artichokes, but I love the ones from the can. The jar, not so much. Too pickly. I justified keeping them earlier because I truly might use them someday. But I need a space for barbecue sauce that I'll definitely use, so I'm free to stick the jar of artichokes into the donate box. I don't even feel guilty. I'm not insulting the artichokes. I'm just facing reality. Stuff we will definitely eat deserves shelf space more than stuff we might never eat. The fridge. I'm going to divide the fridge into 2 parts, the inside and the outside. I'll devote a few words to the outside. Look at each thing hanging on it, throw away anything irrelevant, expired coupons, school notes from last year, and so on, and stick magnets you don't like in the donate box. Now marvel at how much better your entire kitchen looks since the eyesore you never noticed is no longer an eyesore. Now, the inside of the fridge. Ugh. I hate this part, but let's break it down. Step 1. Trash. I drag my trash can in front of the fridge and start dumping. Empty jelly jars, a bottle of olives with a single olive in it, sitting next to the new olives, empty milk jugs, don't ask. Random stuff I wouldn't even eat if my life depended on eating something. Takeout containers, Ziploc bags that held 3 leftover tater tots I totally thought I would eat with my lunch the next day, but the next day was more than a month ago. You get the picture, so I'll move on. Step 2, easy stuff. Stuff that has a home other than the fridge, but for some strange reason is in the fridge, is easy. There's always something. I usually find hot pads or serving utensils in there. Unfortunately, reusable containers that need to be emptied of their contents, whether those contents are still identifiable or not, are easy. Cleaning them out isn't the least bit fun, but there's no decision to be made. Step 3. Duh, clutter. This is the why do I have this stuff? Like the odd sounding marinade that came in a gift basket last Christmas. It's the fat-free salad dressing you thought was going to help you lose 12 pounds, but turned out to be disgusting. Step 4. Ask the decluttering questions. There may or may not be an opportunity to use the first decluttering question in the fridge, but you have it if you need it. The second decluttering question, however, is useful. If I needed this item, would it ever occur to me that I already had one? With food, this happens to me a lot. I have no idea I already have one in the fridge, so I buy another while I'm at the store. Sometimes this conscious cleaning out will help me remember to use it, but sometimes I have to admit I'm never going to eat it. If thinking about this makes your head want to explode, don't worry. I'll dive more into the dilemma of food waste soon. Step 5. Make it fit. This one is easier in the fridge than in the pantry because there probably, hopefully, aren't any groceries waiting to go into the fridge sitting in a bag on the floor. If your fridge is still over full after the first 3 steps to working through the mess, contain. Make it fit. Accept that the size of your fridge is the size of your fridge. When I lived in Thailand, we had a small fridge. It was slightly bigger than the dorm fridges I had in college, but significantly smaller than the smallest fridge I've had at any other time in my adult life. And the freezer was tiny. And you know what? My fridge was the size it was. So profound, right? Even after the 50th time I've said a version of that statement. I can't completely compare because I wasn't feeding a family of 5 at that time, but we survived. My roommates and I cooked almost every evening at home and kept snacks and breakfast foods in that fridge. Our reality was that we had a small fridge, and we made that reality work. I remind myself that one of my reasons for thinking I need a humongous fridge is cultural. A giant refrigerator is normal in my part of the world. But the main reason I once thought I needed an even bigger fridge was that I had too much stuff in the one I had. Step 5.1. Consolidate. Start putting like things together. Again, this will reveal ridiculous multiples that may have escaped your notice when you were pulling out trash and obvious stuff. It also might free you to get rid of the almost empty ketchup if you realize you have 4 almost full bottles. You'll realize you never got rid of that strange-tasting salsa even after you brought home the kind everyone likes. Step 5.2. Purge down to the limits of the container. Honestly, this step is rarely needed for me when I'm cleaning out, decluttering my fridge. Getting rid of easy stuff and revealing excessive multiples through consolidating usually leaves lots of space. But if you still need to purge, apply what you've learned so far and get rid of enough stuff that the things left can be accessed easily. Now your counters and your pantry and your fridge are so much better off than they were when you started. Your kitchen overall feels significantly more functional than it did yesterday. Enjoy it. But if certain kitchen clutter-related questions still plague your soul, don't skip the next chapter. Chapter 13. another chapter about kitchens. Kitchens have a lot of challenges, and I have a lot to say about those challenges. I have so much to say that my editor thought it needed to be two chapters instead of one really, really long one. In this chapter, I cover specific issues and specific mindset changes that will have a major impact on your kitchen. The food storage container cabinet. I won't address each and every issue that could possibly come up in every space in every home. You'll have to take the things you learn and apply them to your unique home and unique clutter. But while I'm leaving it to you to apply pantry principles to your baking supplies and go through the same steps in the silverware drawer that you used in the dinner plate cabinet, I am going to talk specifically about the cabinet where you keep food storage containers. This is some of the most direct, I don't care about your unique situation, this is what works, advice I will give anywhere in this book. Store food storage containers with their lids on. I'm telling you, this works. You bought a book about decluttering. I told you my goal was not perfection, but less. Not magazine-worthy after photos, but spaces that fit your lifestyle and stay under control with minimal mental anguish. If you had to hold your nose and stifle your gag reflex as you opened up food storage containers full of unidentifiable inedibles, you have too many food storage containers. You most definitely have too many if you have a sink full of soaking in bleach water containers that came out of the fridge and you have clean ones in your cabinet. The issue is limiting your number of food storage containers to the container available, which is the cabinet where you keep them. Everyone knows you can fit more food storage containers in a cabinet if you nest them, especially if you get the kind that all use the same size lids and vary only by height so they can all nest. But the goal isn't to get as many into the available space as possible. It's to declutter. To make the space easy to use and able to stay under control pretty much all the time. Here's my problem with stuffing in as many containers as possible. If I grab a container for my leftover spaghetti, I can't just grab the container. I have to get the right-sized container out of the middle of the neat little nesting stack. And now this means I have two, or more, depending on whether I got the right size on the first try, stacks of nested container bottoms that need to be re-nested. And I knock over the neat little stack of lids, even though I was just grabbing the one off the top. Or I pull out one lid from the cool lid-storing gadget thingy and send the rest toppling to the floor. I just wanted to put my spaghetti in the fridge. I do not have time to reorganize the entire blankety-blank cabinet. And every time I put the containers away, there's arranging involved and thinking involved and more than minimal effort involved. So honestly, I used to literally shove lids and bottoms into the cabinet as quickly as possible so I could slam the door shut and hopefully avoid the avalanche. That didn't work. The cabinet was a huge mess at all times. I came up with a system that isn't the least bit complicated, but totally works. I put lids on containers as I take them out of the dishwasher or off the dish drainer when I hand wash and stick them in the cabinet. They don't nest, so no finagling is required. When I need a container, I grab it. All of it. No searching for a matching lid. It's truly one of the best and most lasting solutions I've come up with. I can't keep as many, anywhere near as many, but that's okay. I didn't need as many as I once believed I needed. Remember all those gross ones in the fridge? My fridge was an endless and infinite black hole. I had no idea how many containers were shoved in the back of the fridge until I ran out of clean storage containers. When my goal was to get as many as I possibly could into the space I had a bazillion. I could go longer before I had to clean out the fridge, losing meatballs and macaroni and giving mango chunks time to shapeshift into something very different from and way scarier than mango. A smaller number of containers meant I was more aware we were running out, and I cleaned out the fridge more often. This meant we wasted less food, and we didn't suffer injuries from falling containers when I opened the cabinet door. And I didn't lose my mind when I could find every size lid except the one that matched the container I had just filled with food. That's a triple win. wasting food. I mentioned wasted food. Let's talk about that. I've been planning to bring it up since we talked about the pantry, which is probably when you thought about it. You might have thought bad thoughts about me for telling you to throw away perfectly, probably good food. I generally get bothered by such things too, but this is a book about decluttering. Are you tired of me saying that yet? The goal is to make your home easier to manage. An easier to manage home will mean less wasted food in the future. Get that? Less wasted food is the goal. But you're not living in your goal world yet. The real question is, have you already wasted the food? I am not here to debate whether dates stamped on packages are sell-by dates or you'll probably die if you eat this date. That isn't the issue. The issue is that you haven't eaten it, and it has expired. If you aren't willing to let the printed expiration dates be your deciding decluttering factor, consider these things. If you purchased the food after it expired because you're fanatical about saving money, great. But you need to eat it soon because it was already expired when you bought it. If you bought it in a normal grocery store at a normal distance from its expiration date, ask yourself, why haven't I eaten it yet? Do I not actually like it? Did it get lost behind a mass of other cans and boxes? That's why you're decluttering. You don't want to lose things anymore. You have three choices. You can eat it tonight. You can throw it away. Or you can donate food that isn't expired so there's room to keep the expired stuff. Note, you can't donate expired food. Really, food banks have to throw it out, so that wastes everyone's time. If you're the one convinced it's okay to eat expired food, then you need to be the one to eat it. The goal here is to live in the real world, your real world, the world where you do or do not eat expired food. I'm an idealist too. I feel horrible guilt when I have to throw something away that could have fed a child in my community if I had either not purchased it in the first place or donated it before it expired. Even worse, I know from experience how the denial slash procrastination cycle goes. I see that something is expired and I feel guilty for wasting food, but I don't like feeling bad, so I nip that feeling in the bud and stick the expired food back into the cabinet. I tell myself that I've read somewhere that some foods can still be eaten for a certain amount of time after the date that's stamped on the can. I just don't know which foods can last how long. I'll have to look that up. The idea of future me being so resourceful, looking things up, and so idealistic, not wasting that long-forgotten can of tuna, makes me feel happy and proud. I like feeling happy and proud way more than I like feeling guilty. But idealistic future me lives in the future. She exists tomorrow, the day that's always a day away. I have finally embraced realistic right now me. She's the one who makes lasting progress in my home. Realistic right now me likes tuna, but she doesn't like the idea of eating tuna that's a little fishy. Fishy as in, is this going to be the last tuna I ever eat? Realistic right now me has to admit that if I don't want to eat the tuna now, I need to get rid of it. Here's some things to think about while you're deciding whether a certain can of tuna or spinach or garbanzo beans gets to stay. Can I eat it today? You just said it was fine to eat, so eat it. If you're balking at my bossiness, is it because you have an elaborate meal planned for tonight after your long day of pantry decluttering? Okay, then put it on the menu for tomorrow night or a week from today, since you're such an amazing menu plan maker, or eat it for lunch tomorrow. What's that? You have no idea what to do with garbanzo beans? Well, there's this thing called the internet, and you can look up fast and easy garbanzo beans recipes, or just make hummus. Garbanzo beans are the same thing as chickpeas, and if you drain them and blend them with some olive oil and spices, they taste amazing spread on pita bread or dipped with a carrot. I know we're getting off track here, and I know you're probably experiencing a vague memory of someone casually mentioning garbanzo beans and homemade hummus in a book you read once, and you're pretty sure that's why you have them. My point is that you need to either eat the garbanzo beans or get rid of them. And no, I have no idea how long garbanzo beans are non-poisonous after their expiration date. You'll have to search the internet for that too. Or you can throw them away. Throwing away food should hurt. Let the intense feeling of regret change how you shop in the future. As you reach for an unusual ingredient in the store, let the memory of this regrettable moment make you pause. In that pause, you'll either search for fast and easy garbanzo beans recipe on your phone so you can grab any other ingredients you need to make the recipe this week, or you'll put the can back on the shelf because you don't have the energy to go through all that hassle. Either way is better than what we have here. Possibly edible food and a whole lot of regret. Have I ever passed this up in favor of something unexpired? I once had a can of blueberry pie filling. I think I brought it home after a weekend at the lake with extended family. My husband makes amazing pancakes, and I wanted to let people request special fruity ones. Except that if you are going to make blueberry pancakes, get blueberries, not blueberry pie filling. It doesn't really work the same. We learned the hard way with the first can, so the second can came home unopened. I'd seen that can of blueberry pie filling in the cabinet for a while. I wasn't sure exactly how long it had been there, but we'd been laughing about blueberry pie pancakes for a long time. Then one day, I needed to make a pie. Blueberry seemed the perfect choice because I already had blueberry pie filling. But when I went to open the can, I saw that it was expired. Several years expired. And though I hemmed and hawed and told myself my mother would have used it and that we'd all most likely be alive tomorrow, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't handle the thought of ruining our holiday with blueberry pie poisoning. So I got in my car, drove to the store, and bought another can of pie filling and left the expired blueberry pie filling in the cabinet because most likely it was fine, except that I'd passed it up for something not expired. Have you ever passed up expired food in favor of something similar that wasn't expired? Did you, like me, pass it up because that day just wasn't a good day to be sick? As someone who has such bizarre thoughts on a regular basis, allow me to ask you what I've had to ask myself many times. Hello, and when exactly is it a good time to be sick? If you believe expired food is good enough to eat, then eat it. If you hesitate to eat it, throw it out. I'm sorry, I really am, because I know how much it hurts to give up on how resourceful, idealistic future me was going to be. Robbing her of the opportunity to prove her creativity and frugality feels downright cruel. But remember your goal. A house that's easier to manage because it doesn't hold stuff you are never going to use. And you aren't going to use food you're not willing to eat. Repurposing. Are you a repurposer? Yay, that's awesome. Or are you a wannabe repurposer? There's a big difference. I was somewhere in between. I collected stuff like I was the world's greatest reuser of all things that looked like trash to the untrained eye. In every pickle jar or childproof medicine container, I saw not only dill slices or pills, I saw the future. I saw baking soda being stored in a perfectly good and free glass container, and I saw tiny beads sorted neatly by color. Creativity is awesome, and I love the side of me that sees the world differently. I celebrate her. But I have to reconcile her with the other side of me. The other side of me is perfectly fine living in clutter until I'm not. Until I'm late for an important appointment or awaiting the ring of a doorbell and I can't find what I need or I have nowhere to shove things because an entire cabinet, and maybe more, is full of trash. Trash with possibilities, but still trash. And then I despise creative me. The number one way I've found to keep this precarious balance in check is to declutter. Every time I cleaned out a cabinet full of empty spaghetti sauce jars, I viewed each new spaghetti sauce jar that entered my home differently. Decluttering question number one applies here too. Where would I look for it first? Honestly, on the rare occasion I needed an empty pickle jar, I'd change my meal plan for the day so I could empty the jar that was in the fridge and use it immediately. Usually, I wouldn't even remember that I had a stash of empty pickle jars in the cabinet. Hello, decluttering question number two. I forgot about my collection because these were everyday items that were constantly coming into my home. Employ the decluttering strategy of using things. While I decluttered my kitchen, I stop to transfer baking powder and cornstarch into a couple of the glass containers. That used two, and I immediately saw the 20 that were left in the cabinet as clutter. I stuck those in the donate box, or you can put them in the trash bag or the recycling bin. If your heart's desire is to be prepared for projects and crafts in the future, go ahead and keep empty ketchup bottles if you have the space to store them. Just let that space limit the number you keep. As you come across better, more useful jars and bottles, use the one-in-one-out rule. The head explosion rule. Before I finish this second chapter about kitchens, let me point out that you will likely find opportunities to make use of my head explosion rule while you're decluttering your kitchen. I created the head explosion rule for but situations. I apply this rule if the two decluttering questions are too overwhelming. I use it when I can't clear the mental image of myself as a world saver and frugal queen. If I feel like my head is going to explode over a decision that isn't life-changing, but feels totally life-changing, I choose to declutter the item because no item is worth my head exploding. Grandma's dishes. I've talked about plates, pots, pans, and pickle jars. You've realized the dishes you actually use are your favorites. But what about Grandma's dishes, or Aunt Sally's crocheted pot holders, or Uncle Henry's hand-carved cutting board? Even though they're special and legitimately sentimental, the container concept still applies. Do they fit in the container that is your kitchen? If you don't use them, are they taking up container space that is needed for things you do use? Ultimately, every question comes down to the container concept. Do you have the space to keep these things? If not, what are you willing to get rid of so you can keep them? Honestly, the kitchen is such an intensely used space in the home, things moving in and out of cabinets and drawers on a multiple times each day basis, that I don't consider my kitchen to be a place to store things I will never actually use. It's your decision, but here are some things to consider. Are you keeping these things because you love them or because you feel guilty about not keeping them? Can you use them? Aunt Sally didn't crochet those pot holders so you would stick them in a drawer and think ugly thoughts about them every time you felt frustrated over the state of your kitchen. She crocheted them so people she loved would be able to protect their dining room tables from the scorching heat of freshly cooked meals. Using items like these, sometimes to the point where they get completely used up, brings about a tiny bit of the feeling I have when a loved one passes away after a long and full life. I'm sad, and the grief is real, but I feel no regret because the items did what they were created to do. They fulfilled their purpose. Treasure. Don't store. If Uncle Henry loved carving so much that he never considered how much bacteria would collect in the lines of his design, do you love this cutting board enough to use it as a decoration? Can you hang it on the wall where it makes you smile? That's a much better option than grumbling every time you have to dig around in a too full cabinet to find a cutting board you can actually use. If there's an entire collection of Grandma's plates that you don't love and aren't willing to make space for by getting rid of the ones you actually use, can you keep one? A plate hanging on the wall will remind you of her every day. She'd like that better than a messy kitchen anyway. Chapter 14, Bedrooms. My favorite thing about bedrooms is how you can close the door and hope no one opens them during a party. Sort of kidding, sort of not. We've tackled living areas, super visible, and kitchens, very visible. Now we're ready for bedrooms, not visible if I can possibly help it. Here's the thing. If you've worked to declutter your living areas and kitchen and have been going back to re-declutter them when you have some time so they stay decluttered, you may just be ready to get to the bedrooms on that prioritizing by visibility scale. And a decluttered bedroom is like candy. Having a floor I can walk across in the dark without tripping thrills my soul. My biggest complaint, though, about decluttering a bedroom is how quickly it gets recluttered. Before I started my desloppification process, the lightning-fast recluttering made me question the point of working in my bedroom. But every time I re-declutter a bedroom, not reorganize, but re-declutter, it stays under control a little longer, and I'm willing to get rid of a little more than I could bear to declutter last time. So getting started, no matter how overwhelming, is worth your time. How I started making lasting progress in my bedroom.